You're listening to Traveling the Silk Road with Belly Dancer and author Layla Najma. For more Belly Dance articles, free instructional videos, and DVDs, go to Layla-Najma.com. Now, here's Traveling the Silk Road with Layla.
But to get on with our topic today, excuse me, the one thing that I noticed about this morning's chat was kind of the direction that we went. It was really about that old question of how do I hear music, and then, of course, how do I know how to put a specific move in when I hear my favorite song? And that's a tough one because I think as a teacher, the one thing that I've always tried to do is to help my students understand movement, but it's not always easy to help someone understand, excuse me, movement when it comes to music that they're not familiar with. So the one aspect I would suggest to everybody, for those of you who are just starting out with your choreography or who've been working on it a while, excuse me, and who have a block on what to do, is check up on your history on a specific culture and look up what kind of music that particular culture plays. For instance, I love classical Egyptian music. So when I was starting out, I realized what I wanted to do was to maybe view the dancers who were legendary in with the culture, and then understand kind of the history of maybe a composer or people who created music, and then maybe singers, because I think it's important to get all those aspects down when you want to be a choreographer. So I think that with me, I have to apologize, my throat's giving me trouble for quite a while, so I may be hacking and coughing throughout this, so I apologize for that. But when I was in Egypt, I made sure that I heard as much live music as possible, because I think if you hear the music live, it'll make more sense for you. And I think if you see dancers performing to live music, that is going to help you out big time. Because if you see dancers from the actual country that you're actually representing, you're going to understand the movement a little bit better to the live music and understand how they dance to either a 4-8 count or 6-8 count. Because in any type of Arabic music, we know there's going to be repetition, but we also know that when they compose music, they compose it so that there's phrasings in the music that repeat but also are easy to count to in the even counts. Now, I like to do odd counting myself, but then that's a whole other story, and we can get into that later on in another chat. But for right now, in your basic choreography, in your structured choreography, which is in the box, I always suggest for all my students to go look up as much information as possible on that particular country. Like, say, for instance, for me, it would be Egypt. I know that we're going to go through counts and measures with the music, and there's different rhythms. I'm going to run through a few here. You have your ballady, maksoum, you have your siftatelli, and you have your bolero, and you have other rhythms that you're going to find in the percussion and in the phrasing and in the actual composing of the music. So you know that. And there's much more. There's malfouf, and there's masmoudi, falahi. I'm sure there's some I'm forgetting here. Saidi. But, you know, so these are beats that come from different parts of the Middle East. And so you have to understand, when you're dancing to Middle Eastern music, what these beats are. That's really important. Also, you have to know what kind of instruments that they're playing. There's going to be percussion, wind, and stringed. And back in the Pharaonic ages, the music was really more jazz oriented because there wasn't as much percussion and there was more string. So it was a excuse me, a jam session that was really interesting. And, you know, the musicians would get together. They didn't always have time to practice, and they would just jam. And so the dancers would come in, and they would have to understand the music and the phrasings and the, you know, the different measures of the rhythm. And they'd come in, and they would dance. So as time has progressed, and, of course, as the world has gotten to where it's smaller, we're able to incorporate different instruments in with bands, and it excuse me, and it's changed. So, you know, there's different, as far as the different instruments, you know, you have your oud, which is your string, your nai, which is your flute, and your dumbek, which is your drum, and that's just a few of the instruments, okay? And there's, you know, nowadays you have keyboard. So understand the instruments, understand your rhythms, and then understand the people who are from that country to make this all come about. Now, in the 1930s, there was a very famous composer in Egypt. His name was Abdul Wahab, and he's called the father of belly dance music, or the father of Middle Eastern music. And he was very famous. You know, he created a beautiful forte of classical music. Today, you have Hossam Ramzi, Rita Darwish, and Hakim. So we know who some of our wonderful musicians are and composers are today, but you want to get to know the people from the past. Also, I think it's important to understand the changes that have occurred in belly dancing when you're learning to be a choreographer. I think that's really, really important. There was an amazing dancer. Her name was Badia Mansabni in Egypt. She created the first nightclub for women. And she changed belly dancing. Excuse me. She taught women to use space where before it was called the popular dance. And so women would just stay in a small space and dance. Then she had them move their arms out to their sides. How about that? And she introduced the veil. But the veil was just part of the entrance. So they didn't do much with it. They trolled with it, and then they let it go and started dancing. But she introduced using your arms out to your side and actually bringing them up because she wanted people from the back of her club to see the girls dancing, and she wanted them to dance all around the stage. And so she changed the way that dance was done. And we're talking World War II era because Hitler actually wanted her to be a spy. So it, interesting story there. She never wanted to be a spy, and so, but she did have a successful nightclub career, and she was big as far as the changes of dance, and I really consider her the mother of belly dance because she changed a lot of stuff for dancers who came after. And, you know, we're looking at Tahiya Karioka, Naima Akef, Samia Gamal, and then later years, we're probably talking about 60s, Zahir Zaki, Nadja Fouad, Fifi Abdou, Farida Fahmy, and then we have Lucy. And, of course, today we have Dina, you know. So all these dancers came from a history, a heritage, where the movement and the music had a relationship and a connection. And so I think the important thing for all of you who are listening is, excuse me, is to understand this connection. You have to know it to be a choreographer and to be an educated choreographer. It's now with the fusion of today, the fusion music, and with the different aspects of belly dancing today, I think that you just have to educate yourself as far as the older aspects of this dance is what it's all about. Because the modern version of what belly dance is, we have the Gothic belly dancing now. We have different fusions with Bollywood and other things coming in. So get to know the older aspects of whatever country you are representing. So I just think with anybody who's dancing, that's a given, and that's something that we have to do. Now, one thing that I noticed that we talked about this morning was, and getting back to one of my first statements when I started out, was what do you do with someone who doesn't understand the music and not quite sure what to do with dancing to music? And that's a tough one because I had dancers say to me, "Layla, I don't understand the music. It pretty much, it doesn't talk to me. It doesn't say, do this move." And so what I think is a really important thing to do here is to then pull in the structure of movement. Now, in the box, choreography is based on a structure. So most teachers who have dancers coming in from beginner to beginner intermediate to intermediate level will have choreographed pieces for the dancers to do. And that makes it easier for dancers to kind of see how movement fits with music. They may not understand why a move was placed in where it was, but they get the feel for movement with music and with the melody. And that's a good way to start out. But in my studio, what I used to do is I would have homework for my students, and I would tell them, and sometimes I'd pick the music out for them, and they didn't like that, but it's what I did. And I'd say, choreograph a small piece of this and come back and show me what you did in class. And some girls would be just a nervous wreck the next week, and others just couldn't wait to perform what they came up with, and others just wouldn't do the homework because they're just like, I don't know how to do this. And so what I would tell those girls who wouldn't do the homework is that you have to participate in class, and you can do self-expression any way that you want, but you know certain moves, and so what I want you to do is just do moves that come to your mind. And so when I would have this homework for students, one thing that I found that made it easier for them to understand was seeing each other dance. Because sometimes, you know, you go brain dead, and it's easy, so easy, to forget what you're doing or what you choreographed. So when the girls could see each other doing the dances with movement that they have all learned together, then it made more sense to them to see how movement was placed in to the music. So, and a lot of what I picked was Arabic pop because I didn't want to pick anything classical because classical kind of takes a lot of training, I think, and a lot of confidence to be able to perform to. The Arabic pop is a lot easier, and it has easier rhythms that the girls can kind of follow a lot better than something classical where they have stops and different aspects of the music they don't understand. So that was one way that I think that the students were able to understand and see how movement actually fit in with music by seeing their buddies, their comrades in arms and dance perform. Then what I would do is I would have three different groups in class, and I would pick out another song, and I'd say, okay, you're going to work on this part, and this part. And then they would all be working on different choreographies or different parts of the song. And then I'd give them a certain amount of time, and they would come together, and everybody, each group would do their part of their choreography. And what was really cool was then I would say, now you have to teach each other what you just did. And so each group had to teach their fellow belly dancers what they had just done. And by teaching what you came up with and by having to show somebody how a movement fits in with the music, it also helps you understand how to place in movement in with music. You start to get it. The light bulb goes off, the epiphany happens, and you go, oh, okay, I get that. So that helped my students a lot. Excuse me. With my private students, if I helped them create a choreography, I would always and I have students who can tell you this. I would always have them change it up. I'd say, your homework for this week is to change up this section of what we came up with, what we've been working on. I want it different. I want it you, and I want it by next week. And some students could do it, and some couldn't, and that was okay. But what happened was that when they would come in and show me what they did, or show me what they tried to do, we would work on it together, but it was still their choreography. So then it made something that I created, it made it a mesh, something mixed in with their own choreography. So they had a little piece that was all theirs. And then they started to understand how to make movement fit in with music. And I think that it's not as scary as we make it out to be. I think that working in a structured choreography, having your teacher help you, and actually having your teacher do that, actually create some choreography, have it structured, is important so that you could get to the spontaneous choreography. Because believe it or not, spontaneous choreography is a loosely structured, different version, version B of in-the-box choreography. You have to be comfortable in your own skin to do spontaneous choreography. Spontaneous choreography is perfect for restaurants, and I danced in restaurants for over 15 years, and I can't tell you how many times it saved me. Oh, my God. You know, you plan something, and then somebody walks behind you. You knock into somebody. Something happens. So spontaneous choreography helps for those unknown moments that are crazy, that you just don't know what's going to happen. Also, if you're working with live musicians, okay, and I always think that's so funny because musicians, of course, they're going to be alive, but they're not going to be dead. But when you work with live musicians, especially in nightclubs, sometimes they will play music differently than what you see, what you hear it in recorded music. And I actually, one time, had a band in Houston at a nightclub called The Mirage. There were two musicians in the back. One was, I think, an oud player, and the other one was a keyboard player. And so they were playing music, and all of a sudden I could hear loud talking in the back. And I noticed that the music changed, and it was repeating itself over and over and over again. And the other musicians were looking at these two, trying to calm them down. And there I was, you know, just, and it was, I don't remember what I was doing at the time, but I remember I was thinking, oh, my God, what am I going to do? So I turned around, and I looked at the two musicians because I was walking towards them, and I just told them to stop. I said in a very loud voice, stop. And they realized what they had done because they were, I think they were arguing over how to do a certain part of the music, how to go to the next phrasing in the music. And anyways, I was doing spontaneous dancing without wanting to, but I had no choice. And so you might have something like that happen, where you might have something, a song that you know the band plays well, weekend after weekend. And then all of a sudden you'll have something bizarre like that happen. And, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. So spontaneous choreography saves you. It's really saves a lot of the unknown aspect of the dance, because when stuff like that happens, you really don't know what's going to come next. So spontaneous choreography, excuse me, is where you base everything that you understand about the structured aspect of choreography, where you take it and then you're able to go freeform with it and perform on stage effortlessly and easily. And that's the whole purpose for us getting up on stage, is to look like we were born doing what we do. So spontaneous choreography can have that aspect of that beautiful look on stage, and so can structured choreography or in-the-box choreography. They both have their different, you know, characteristics to them that make them very appealing for dancers. But I always say that to my students, you have to be good at both. You have to know structured choreography, understand how other people work in movement, understand music, before you can get to the spontaneous aspect of dancing where you're comfortable in your own skin and you're able to dance to anything or at any given time, you know, if something happened like what with me happened with a band having an argument in the middle of my show, you know, you can kind of cover for it. And then there's something else that happens with choreography is if you go to workshops, and I think workshops are really important for the aspiring choreographer because when you go to a workshop and you learn somebody else's choreography, you may go home and not take in everything that they taught you. But the one thing that you will do is you will gain 3 to 4 new moves that you can add to your repertoire of moves, your library of moves. And that's what I used to do is I used to love to go to workshops so I could see during the workshop show how dancers actually performed to the certain songs that I loved. And what was really cool during my nightclub era and my restaurant dancing era was that a lot of dancers, we all dance to the same music. And so I think it's so important to see other dancers perform to music that you love. So you can see their interpretation of the music. That's another wonderful way to understand choreography and to understand possibly movement in a way that you never thought of before. So workshop shows and actually going to hofflas and going to restaurants and watching my friends dance is a good way for me to look at choreography in a way I never imagined and thought of. And I think that's key element for anybody. I don't care how long you've been dancing or creating your own choreographies, or if you're a true choreographer, you still have to keep watching and learning what's happening out there in the world. Because if you don't, something can happen which is unbelievable, but you can get stagnant in your dancing. And I'll give you a good example. I had been dancing in the Dallas area for about 5-6 years, and about within the 2-year mark, I was dancing at 3 restaurants. And I had heard that there was a new restaurant that had opened up. And so I decided, well, I'm going to go audition for this new restaurant, and maybe I can get another gig, get my 4th restaurant. So I went in. It was a Persian restaurant. It was small, but it was really beautifully decorated. And in the middle of my show, the owner stopped my music and said to me, come back when you learn how to belly dance. And I have to say I was just totally flabbergasted. I thought he was being so mean. I was already dancing at restaurants, so I couldn't be that bad. But when I got home and I had a good cry, I realized that this guy had done me a favor. Because even though at that time I was, you know, my own choreographer and I was dancing at all these places, I felt bored and stagnant, almost lackadaisy in my dancing, and I knew it. So what I decided to do is go back to square one, and I decided to take out all the moves that I had been doing that just didn't feel like me anymore. Because, you know, in this dance, we do grow. We grow continually, and you're going to find how you feel today is going to be entirely different than how you feel a year from now in this dance form, because you're going to grow so much. So I realized I hadn't thrown anything away, that there were moves that I was doing because I was told they were the right moves to do. And they were really good foundation movements, but, you know, they just I had outgrown them. And I think it's okay to say as a choreographer that you've outgrown moves, because that's going to happen. You're going to find that there's some moves that you just don't do anymore. Like, I don't do figure eights anymore. I haven't done figure eights in years. I do a different type of figure eight that I created from another move that I teach, but I don't do figure eights anymore. I just don't. And that's my example. So when I was at home and I decided I'm going to start from square one, and I thought, well, if I'm going to throw these moves out or just, you know, retire them, I should say, then what I'm going to do is bring out all those moves I've always wanted to do. I'm going to make it okay to do them. And so within a little over a 3-month period, I had changed my dancing style. And it was really, at that point, more me than it was prior to that. I think I was a mishmash of a lot of beautiful and amazing women who were my teachers, but I just didn't dance like them, and I knew I never would. So what I decided to do was to figure out what was my style, what did I want to do, and I wanted to go back to that restaurant, and I wanted to re-audition for him, and I wanted to show him that I could really dance. And I was actually excited. I noticed with the change in me that I just had a different spark when I danced, and people would say, well, you're so happy, and you know, you danced so good tonight. It was because I felt good in my skin. So I went back to that restaurant, and as you might have imagined, that guy, the owner, saw me, excuse me, and he looked at me, and he didn't really want to talk to me, and he said, oh, I told him, I want to re-audition for you. Can you just do this for me? Let me do this. And so he's rolled his eyes and said, okay, come tomorrow after lunch. And so I did. And I think the sets for him were like 20 minutes. And so I decided to put together a wonderful group of songs that really inspired me. And I ended with a drum solo. And then he didn't turn my music off. And when I got done, he said, so, Layla, you learned how to belly dance. And he hired me that day. And I realized from that experience that even though I had been dancing, I mean, and I probably at that point had been dancing 4 days a week, that's a lot, that I had somehow burned myself out at both ends, and that the choreographer in me was just not inspired anymore. And that can happen to you as a choreographer. So the important thing to remember is that you have to figure out where to go to get inspired again. I mean, for me, it was trying to prove to that owner that he was wrong, that I could belly dance. But I understood what he was saying, and I agreed with him because I didn't feel my best. So what is the one or two or three or four or five ways of inspiring yourself? And it's what I had just said earlier. Go to workshops. Go to shows. Go to restaurants where there's dancers. Talk to your friends. Just get together and have fun dancing. Because at that point when I had auditioned for that owner the second time, I was really excited and happy. Before that, I just figured, oh, he's going to hire me. And, you know, I was just kind of lazy about it. And so I think I forgot to have fun. So you have to have fun as a choreographer, or you're going to miss the boat, because if you get too technical, then you're not going to have that feeling on stage or that glow on stage that dancers have when they totally get what they're doing. So I finally realized that with that one experience that I had. And I think that if you have a girl's day out every once in a while, and you can actually enjoy other people's dancing, that is going to inspire you. But as I had mentioned earlier, I think it's important to check out dancers from years ago, legendary dancers, who made this dance what it is. And the dancers for me that I love are Tahia Carioca, Naima Akef, Samia Gamal, Zohair Zaki, and probably I saw Zohair Zaki live when I lived in Egypt, and I got to tell you, to me, she is the goddess of belly dance, because she inspired me so much that to this day, that if I feel blue or down about my dancing, I just go watch one of her movies, and I feel so much better because she inspires me so much. And then there's Nadra Fouad, excuse me, who I saw live. I enjoy her dancing. I didn't like her as much as Zohair, but I did feel that she had a great show and she was full of life. And at the time I saw her perform, she was telling, I guess, dirty jokes in the middle of her shows. And she had a troupe as well. So the troupe that came out and did a lot of dancing while she was going in and having costume changes. But it was really cool to see something more Las Vegas style. And that's kind of what she did, where she had different sets and had a troupe come out, had a large orchestra, and then would tell jokes and crack up people and stuff. So it was a really good show. And, you know, then you have dancers who, like Fifi Abdu and Lucy, excuse me, who are very well known in their own right. And I believe when I was in Egypt, National Geographic was doing a special on Fifi and Lucy at the time. They're doing a special on belly dancers in Egypt. And I met some of the crew, and they had told some friends of mine and myself what they were doing, and we got to talk to them. And they traveled all over the world doing cool stuff, but they were telling us about the fact they'd never really seen belly dancing before, and it was exciting for them. And it was exciting to see that aspect of, you know, the more famous side of belly dancing, especially with National Geographic. That was pretty cool. And then you have, you know, dancers like Dina. Now, I saw Dina when she was, when I was in Egypt, and Dina was very, very sexy then. She hasn't changed. She's still very sexy, but she makes it work. And I say that a lot in my articles. Somehow it's not overdone with her. And that there's something to be said for the audience or the energy or the atmosphere of your choreography. So I think what Dina does is she reminds everybody she's a woman. And I think that's the one part as a choreographer that we can't forget. I think we can want to be these top performers and entertainers, but we're women up on stage. And I think Dina, she's a top performer. She's well-loved in Egypt. She's very loved. She's a wonderful dancer, but she's got that entertainment skill down. So she's got all those different aspects of choreography that make her dance work. So I know that with different dancers from Egypt that I have gotten different information that I kind of filed back when I'm working on my own choreographies. So that's something to think about when you're doing your choreography, is think about what kind of story that you want to tell. Now, I don't think that even if it's spontaneous, I think you should still do a story. And the one thing that I noticed when, excuse me, when I was back in Egypt, the one thing that was amazing for me is that I noticed that not all the singers were great singers. I mean, some of them, to our standards, to our Western standards, were kind of mediocre. But the people, they weren't carried by the voice as much as they were the story in the song. And if a performer, if a singer could take the music and tell the story, sing the story, the audience would just, they would be taken into that story, and either they would follow the singer by singing along, or they would totally get into what the story was all about. And I noticed that with the dancers that I saw in Egypt, and even the ones that were not famous, the ones that were in three-star hotels, who were trying to make a living, and I got to know one lady who, she had been a belly dancer since she was very young, and she just never made it big. And so she was trying to help support her family, and they didn't support her dancing, but they, of course, accepted the money. But she was a wonderful dancer, and what she taught me was that her perseverance was pretty amazing. So there's different characteristics to a dancer when she's performing her choreography up on stage. And so your personality is going to come out. And so what I loved about this one dancer, and I think she was at a hotel in Luxor, and what was amazing about her was that she was very sensual, but she understood her music, and she worked her hips really well, and she was more hip-sensual than anything. So I understood, wow, that at what she taught me was there's so much you can do with your hips. So I didn't forget that. And it's always stuck with me. So there's certain dancers you're going to see that are going to be remembered in your choreography no matter how many times you create choreography. And this gal is always there in the background. There's another dancer that I saw who had a candelabra on her head, and she was probably, I'd have to say, in her late 40s, early 50s. She had the best hip work of anybody I've ever seen. She surpasses anybody I've seen. And she, I think I saw her at the Balloon Theater, and the crowd loved her. And she was an older woman dancing. She inspired me because she was so confident in her ability to dance. Again, she was all hip work. Of course, when you have a candelabra on your head, you know, it's not, you can't do head spins and stuff like that. And you can't really, you know, do turns and stuff without one on like you could if it was glued on your head. And even then, it wouldn't be easy to do. So I was very impressed by the fact that she was able to do the hip work that she could do and the layering, because she did some layering, and I was just blown away by that. So I pulled that into my choreography. So if you're a choreographer, you're also going to pull in those dancers that you love. You're going to pull in, if you like, Zuhaila Salimpour. You're going to pull her in, or Sadie, or Jelena, or anybody else that you like, or Alexandra King, or Helena Vlahos. I mean, if you like specific dancers as a choreographer, they're going to be inspirational to you in your choreography. And so I try to hold those women that I love into my choreography sphere, you know, my bubble, so that when I'm creating my dance, I think about them that make me smile that I love. And so I include that into my choreography as well, because I think that's a major part of your structure, because you're telling a story of an interpretation of a culture, but it's your interpretation. I mean, you're not, and I'm not from Egypt. I mean, there may be some of you here who are Middle Eastern descent. I'm not. I did live in Egypt, but I'm not Egyptian. So what I do as a choreographer is I try to represent Egypt the best that I possibly can. And I always think about the dancers that inspire me. And I think it's important to watch dancers and to see what aspect of their body that they used and how they used it. And that's the one way to learn as a choreographer how to work in movement. For instance, Zohair Zaki does a piston drop with a shimmy, and she does it up on the ball of her foot. And she's effortless, and she can just move her hips down like nobody's business, and that's her signature move. She can just do it. So I was inspired by how Zohair does her pistons and shimmies. But she also has a timing to music that is wonderful, and she has exaggerated stops and pauses, which I love. And I think for me, she's just the ultimate dancer. But I love her hip work, and I like her way of expressing the songs. I think I'm probably in personality closer to her than in anybody. But you have Tahiya Karaoke and Naima Akef. You know, these gals had very unique hip work. And you're probably thinking in the 30s and the 40s, these gals took dance, and they changed it. They changed belly dance for all of us. These women had to act, dance, and sometimes sing in movies. So they made belly dancing very fashionable. And so I take that into consideration when I'm working in my choreography, because I think that's very important to know that. And I want to be fashionable when I'm dancing up on stage. And, you know, I try to pull in that aspect of the feeling that I get from that into my choreography. Now, you have Dina, who is as I said before, is very sexual in her dancing, and she makes it work. Well, when I saw her live, I think the one thing that was that I learned from her was it was okay to be a sensual woman. It was okay to be voluptuous and to be curvy and to work in all of that in with my technique and my choreography. I like that about her, and I like the fact that Dina is really, she reminds me of the femme fatale up on stage, because she just carries off this mysterious energy to her. And when you see her live, you can kind of grasp what she's doing, because she's leaving her audience in suspense. When I saw her perform, I think it was the Nile Hilton in Cairo, she had, I think, 4 costume changes. And she had a singer and she had her orchestra, and so they would carry over when she was doing her costume changes. And each one was sexier than the one prior. So she dressed very sexually, and mini skirts, you know, and just barely covering her here and there. But it never overshadowed her dancing. So that's kind of her style and what she does. Now, I don't carry off how she dresses into my choreography, but I do try to bring out my feminine aspects of who I am into my choreography. So choreography isn't just a structure. It's not just movement. It's a mood. It's energy. It's your story that you're telling your audience. It has everything to do with you as a woman representing a culture your way. It's your interpretation of how you hear the music, how you want to move to the music, and how you want to use your space on stage. You know, depending on if you have a venue that is restaurant, nightclub, or stage. Whatever you're doing, you want to have these aspects a part of your choreographer personality beforehand. So you have to figure out what is your personality as a choreographer. What turns you on? What do you like? And what do you want to have come out every time you're up on stage performing? Because I think that is just so important to think about these things when you are working on a choreography. One thing that I saw in Egypt that I thought was really important is we know that in structured choreography you have an entrance and then you have an exit. And then you have different aspects of a dancer set in between. Or she'll come out, she'll be introduced, and then, you know, she'll have different parts of the she'll do veil and maybe cane, drum solo, maybe, you know, some other prop or whatever, and then she knows she's going to have an exit song and then she's going to leave. Well, I think it's important for beginner dancers to understand that the history here in America of nightclub performing. And I think that dancers like Helena Vlahos, and I have interview of her on Belly Dance Village that Belly Dance Village members can listen to. So if you guys want to check out Belly Dance Village, go and listen to Helena Vlahos' interview. Helena has been belly dancing, my God, over 40 years, and she was performing in the golden era of nightclub performing. Because they had to do so much. They had to do floor work, finger cymbals, veil, you name it, they did it. They did full 20 to 30 minute sets, and they probably performed 3 times a night. And in some cases, it was 7 days a week. Now, that's what they did for a living. I think it's important as a choreographer to seek out dancers who are part of our heritage and great master teachers, and to find out what they did and what was required of them when they did their choreography. So Helena was one of those people that I highly recommend because she just has so much information. I think Jamila Salampour is another one. And then we have Morocco in New York. There's Dahlia Corella, who's gone more into the theatrical aspect of belly dancing. She does big plays. Jamila's daughter, Suhaila Salimpour, which many dancers know, she does theater dance as well. So these women are really good people to check out and to find out a lot about the choreography that we had in the earlier years. Because I think that if you're a choreographer now and you don't know your history or the history of belly dancing in America, then you're cutting yourself short. Especially if you want to teach choreography to other dancers, you have to understand the history here in America, the signs, the country that you're representing, the dancers from that country, and the aspects of the composers and musicians from that country. It's important to know all of that. But I recommend for anybody to check out information on the Golden Era of Nightclub Performing, because it was, at one point, it was huge. And it was, it is from what I understand from Helena Vlahos and some dancers in New York that I have talked to, is that it was the prime time to be a belly dancer, because you had live bands, you never danced to recorded music, and you were just performing everywhere. So we have a history as dancers that we should incorporate into our choreography as well. I mean, maybe that sounds like a whole lot for some of you, but I think that it's important to be educated in this dance field. Choreography isn't just based on movement to music necessarily, it's based on history and what we represent as a culture and as women, because we have to be in a position down the line to teach the younger generation all about choreography. So we have to keep our heritage and our history alive. That's important to do that with choreography. So that's my view on in the box and out of the box choreography. Now, if you guys have any questions, you know you can write them in if you want to. I would love to hear from you guys. And you can actually send in the questions anytime that you want, because that's what I'm here for. So I would love to see any questions if you guys have any. The one thing that we talked about this morning was choreography and basing it on and I think it was actually, I had a dance, wonderful dancer call in Najla, and Najla was talking about what she was doing with her dancing and how choreography had changed her, and how once she started doing choreography with her dancing, that it made her a better teacher. And that's one thing that I think is really important to state, is that you can't be a good teacher without being a good dancer. You can't be a good dancer without being a good teacher. They go hand in hand. So the more that you're able to teach movement, teach choreography, structured and spontaneous, then you're going to pick up on it, and you're going to keep reminding yourself what you need to keep within your choreography. And it's going to make you, I think it's going to keep you young in this dance anyways, if you keep reminding yourself by teaching other people. The more you teach, the better you become. And you don't lose anything. And I think that's a key element in this dance field, is just don't lose yourself. Don't get burned out like I did when I was talking about years ago when I was dancing in Dallas. Because that can happen. At any given time, I call it belly dance burnout. So that's something that you should think about as well. As far as, I would say, working with live musicians, I worked with live drummers, and I found that I could not, if my life depended on it, choreograph a drum solo. And it's not something that I can do at this point in my life. It's because I'm so used to working with musicians and being able to just kind of flow with the moment with the drummer. And I think that spontaneous choreography is really a place where we come to within ourselves, where we're comfortable, where we're like that comfortable dress that we love to wear, that we feel like we, you know, we look good in it, and besides that, it's comfortable, and it's a great color, and it's a great fit, and it, everything is awesome about it. And I think that spontaneous choreography, after a while for a seasoned dancer, is her rite of passage, because spontaneous choreography is a way of expressing our joy of the dance, and it actually is a way we can showcase our freedom that we feel within the dance, because a lot of women come into belly dancing probably trying to escape stuff. I remember when I had my studio, I had dancers who would come in who are getting divorced, who are in bad relationships, who had depression problems, who had problems with their families. It was an escape so they can have some alone time. Some women were going through an identity crisis. I mean, you name it, probably every problem and issue under the sun came into my studio. But the one thing that I noticed when I would have one class a week where I would turn the lights down low and I would just play music and have the girls dance. And because it was dark, they had that safety net and they would just move and try to explore movement in their body. And it was some of the best dancing I'd ever seen my students do, because they were dancing with an uninhibited view of life. There were no chains shackled around, you know, their feet or their neck, and they were able to just dance with pure freedom. So to me, spontaneous choreography is a little bit different than in the box structured choreography, because it's something that is a little bit more freeing, that allows you to kind of express yourself in a different manner. Maybe a little bit more bohemian, but not really. So the structured choreography is a good learning tool for anybody who wants to understand how to place movement into music. And I think that as teachers, we all know that it just boils down to creating choreography and teaching it to our students and trying to explain why certain movements like pistons and thrusts and layering, why it fits into the music. And a good teacher will do that. She'll explain why she put in movement into a certain part of the song. One thing I would do, and I think that it was fun to actually do this with my students, is I would have a student pick her favorite song. And I would have her be in front, and I would have her pick three movements that she really loved, and I'd have the other students follow her. And when she felt that the students had the movement down, then we'd go to another student and then another student, and we'd pick different that each student liked and enjoyed, and they would teach a few movements, movements that they loved doing. And that was also another one of those ways that I was able to implement an understanding of movement to music. Because sometimes they weren't even thinking about the fact they were teaching movements, combinations to their friends, their co-dancers. They were just enjoying dancing to music that they loved and dancing movement the way they loved to dance. So I think the bottom line as a choreographer is just to understand that you have to have a good time with your dancing. You have to understand the history of the dance and the dancers who made our dance the way it is today, the ones who paved the road for us to be able to do what we are doing. You need to understand the era of nightclub performing and what it took to be a choreographer and dancer years ago. Know the dancers who are legendary here in America and also in other countries. Try to look up information on composers and musicians. And I know that we all know Hossam Ramzy. In fact, he's just come out with a new CD, by the way. So I'm sure it's available already. So he's pretty awesome, and I love his music. I like Hakim as well. He's an amazing musician. And so we all have our favorite musicians. So try to listen to their music and understand their way of composing. and understand instruments that go into making our belly dancing music happen. You know, and then get comfortable in your own skin, in your own body, and do the moves that you love to do. When you're working on your choreography and you're just trying to figure out what to do, make sure you have a structured group of moves that feel good in your body. If you pull in moves that you think will work, then you know right there you've lost the battle. Because if you do what you think you should do instead of doing what you feel is right, it's not going to work. You want to do what you feel is right. It's just the way it is. If you want that flawless look on stage, if you want to be able to flow up on stage, enjoy what you're doing, use moves that you love. Put combinations together that mean something to you. And then you're going to have something amazing, a wonderful, amazing piece of artwork. Each choreography to me is a piece of artwork. And the dancer performing that artwork, she's the creator. She's the artist. So having the two together is what's so appealing for the audience to watch. And just remember that. So I totally enjoyed tonight's topic. And I hope that you guys did as well. If you have any comments about tonight's chat, let me know. And you can always email me at Leyla, L-E-Y-L-A, at Leyla, L-E-Y-L-A, dash Najma, N-A-J-M-A, .com. And if you guys want to, go ahead and check out Belly Dance Village, www.bellydancevillage.com. We have some amazing things happening on Belly Dance Village. We have a new interview up from Spain, a wonderful couple, Christina and Seymour, who are they're ballroom and tango dancers. So they're pretty awesome. It was a lot of fun doing that interview. And I'm now just finishing editing a video on angles and turns and leg extensions. So that's going to be coming up pretty soon on Belly Dance Village as well. So if you guys want to check all of that out, just go there and just see what we have to offer. So I enjoyed tonight immensely, and I thank you guys so much for coming in to the chat room. And also, we're going to have a survey up on my blog to let you guys know, to find out from you guys, what times are best for you for us to do these chats? Because I know everybody's scattered everywhere around the planet. And so we're wanting to find out from everybody what would be a good time for them so we can figure out what times to do these chats in. So please fill out the survey when we get it up and let us know when would be a good time for you to hear the chat. And remember, you can always join in. We would love to hear from you guys. So take care. I enjoyed tonight, and I will see you next week. And next week, we're going to talk about photo shoots and Photoshop. So we're going to talk about those two aspects of dance, and it should be interesting. So anyways, I'll look forward to seeing you guys next week. So take care, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to Traveling the Silk Road with Leyla Najma. For more articles, free videos, as well as DVDs, go to Leyla-Najma.com. And The Divine Unrest is available on Amazon in both ebook, Kindle format, as well as in paperback. And once again, thanks for listening to The Silk Road with Leyla Najma.